All right, I am here with Alexander Mercouris, hanging out in Athens, Greece. And we are about a day removed from our live stream, a couple of days removed from our live stream with the great Robert Barnes, where we really went in depth into what is going on in the United States with Trump and the FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago. Since that live stream, Alexander, we have had the FBI seize the telephone of the mobile phone of, I believe, Perry is his name. He's the Republican from Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. I believe it is Perry. But correct me, comments section, if I'm wrong about that. But they seized his mobile phone. He was with his family, and they just took it. The FBI did that as well. And we have had various statements coming from Trump. We've had some more information as to what this raid was about. We're getting a lot of pressure now for the FBI to release the warrant and other information in and around this this raid at Mar-a-Lago. We are a couple of days removed from this historic event, and we're a couple of days removed from a historic live stream with Robert Barnes. Alexander, how do you see things now that we are heading into the weekend with this big event that took place in Florida?
Right, well, let me first of all reiterate what I said during that live stream, and it echoes very much what Robert Barnes said, because Robert Barnes, unlike me, is an American constitutional lawyer, which is, first of all, that this is an unprecedented raid on Donald Trump in his residence, that it's absolutely shocking what happened, that if the United States authorities, the FBI, feels that Donald Trump is holding papers which he shouldn't be holding, well, they can ask him to return them, and if he doesn't return them, they can seek an injunction, and they can bring legal proceedings. But to simply turn up at someone's door in the way that they did, to seize papers, to open safes, to break in other words, into someone's home, well, that is absolutely outrageous. It's unprecedented, and it's been done to someone who was a former president of the United States. So I think this was a shocking thing. I think it was a terrible thing that was done. Robert Barnes felt the same. I made the comparison, the historic comparison, with what happened in England in the 1640s when King Charles I came with a posse of armed troops to the House of Commons to arrest five members of Parliament who had been criticizing him. And that set in train a sequence of events which led to the English Civil War and, by the way, the eventual trial and beheading of Charles I. So it's, you know, it's an unprecedented sort of action that was done, a massive breach of due process, a massive breach of constitutional rights of privacy, and something that is extraordinarily disturbing because it shows the FBI, an agency of the federal government, the country's premier police agency, becoming involved increasingly in what is looking like political activities. And that is extremely alarming. And now we have more news. We have news about a mobile phone being taken. Again, why was it not asked for? You don't just turn up and seize mobile phones. Obviously, people are asking to see this warrant, and one can understand why. And Donald Trump and his lawyers should certainly have been shown this warrant and seen it properly. And we also have attempts to question Trump through the New York Attorney's Office. So it's all building up into a really deeply troubling pattern. And I have to say, to me, looking at this from a distance, it looks like an increasingly nervous and frightened Washington establishment, getting really worried that the midterms are looming, that the Democrats are going to do really badly in the midterms, that this is going to act as a base for Donald Trump to launch a new attempt to win the presidency in 2024. And now they're taking actions, really desperate and reckless actions, to prevent that happening. And what they're actually doing is that they are damaging the reputation of the FBI, which should not be used in this way. Even if, you know, there are real issues that you can pursue, you can do those through conventional legal processes, not by raids of this kind. And of course, it's increasing the already very dangerous levels of polarization and partisan bitterness that we've seen in the United States.
Do you think there's a sense of buyer's remorse from the Democrat-controlled mainstream media, from the Democrats themselves? Because I saw a lot of reports from CNN, MSNBC, where they were kind of worried that this event has galvanized the Trump MAGA movement even more than they could have ever possibly imagined. As a matter of fact, I think Trump now, I think it's the Save America, his group, the Save America has raised records amounts of money in the past couple of days just from this action. And it seems that Trump, maybe he knew this was going to happen, and that's why he released the statement on Truth Social that he released, because as Robert Barnes highlighted in that live stream, perhaps Trump has some information that really may not concern the Democrats so much, but may concern the FBI and some other permanent state officials. What do you make of this scenario?
I think there is buyer's remorse. I think there is a lot of panic. I think there's a widespread understanding that this has backfired, and that far from intimidating Trump, it's galvanized him. It's played straight into his hands. After all, he was the person who announced the raid. I mean, that was, I think, an indication that he feels has worked to his political advantage. Empty safe, all of these things. So I think from that point of view, I think it's actually worked well for Trump, and I think they know it. And as you absolutely said, there is buyer's remorse. But I also get the sense that they're so deep in that they can't pull back. And that's why you get these attempts to interview him, you know, at the New York Attorney's Office and all of these things. Of course, they will say that these are unrelated matters. But, you know, as I always say, if you believe that, I have a bridge to sell you. I don't think they are. And I think that this is what's causing increasing nervousness on the one hand, but a sense that we started this thing, we can't afford to pull back now, because if we pull back now, it will look like Trump has won, and that will give him more momentum still. So we've got to keep doing this, even though, well, by doing this, they're making part of the nation, a large part of the nation, more and more angry, more and more convinced that this is an abuse of power, and of course it raises the stakes even further ahead of November.
Yeah, but do you think Trump knew this was coming?
Yeah, I think he did. I think he did. Bear in mind, he's a former president. He's bound to have people within the system with whom he's still in contact. He's bound to have sources. And of course, he's been the president. He knows how the system works. If he's got, you know, documents which could have the effects that Robert Barnes said, then he'll have known that sooner or later somebody was going to come round and ask for them. So he'd been very, very careful to make sure that they're in inaccessible places, and he'll have already prepared all the various steps he would take when those people did turn up looking for those papers. He'd have prepared already a plan on how to respond to what they've done. So they should have worked that out, by the way. The Democrats, or whoever it was who all ordered this thing, should have worked out in advance that that's what he would
that's
do.
That's my final question to you to end up the video. This is a hard one. Who do you think, what group or what person or what people do you think were behind this this plan to raid Mar-a-Lago? Like, if you had to pick a group of people outside of just saying the FBI, a group of people or one person or an institution or a party like the Democrats, I'm just throwing out names for now, but who do you think said, we've got to raid Mar-a-Lago. We got to get into that safe, guys. We have got to get into that safe. Who do you think was the person, or the people, or the groups?
I think Robert Barnes thinks that it's people within the permanent government of the United States, what people call the deep state, that, you know, Trump has information about them that they're extremely nervous about, and that it was they who basically did that. And I think you may be right about this, but I also have to say, I think it's people within the Democratic Party establishment, especially the Clinton Obama ring, but perhaps more so the Clinton wing.
Okay.
The Clinton wing. I think, you know, there's lots of, you know, I'm going to choose my words carefully, cans of worms lying around, and I think they're probably extremely nervous that he has information about them. He probably has a lot of information about Russiagate and who is behind all of that. And I think that's probably what is making them nervous.
Bidens? So, what about the Bidens?
And the Bidens. Well, Bidens
Ukraine, Biden, Burisma.
All of that. So, I mean, there's so much there. So I would have thought it's most probably, my own sense is, yes, probably the permanent state, the deep state, does have its concerns. But I think probably the Democratic Party establishment is getting particularly nervous. Bear in mind, if the midterms happen in the way that we all expect, and there's a Republican landslide, and the Republicans gain control of Congress, they're in a position to launch investigations. There's still the Durham investigation, remember that? That's still there. You can reactivate it, perhaps. If you've got all of these pieces of information lying around, you can put them all together, suddenly they become useful. And it may very well be that some people are getting very nervous about the investigations that might start to surface, appear, not so much after November, but after January, when the new Congress meets, and they're doing everything they possibly can before that to get all the paperwork together, seize all the papers, seize all the evidence before those investigations really get started.
Coming to you from Athens, Greece, where, Alexander, if you go up to the Acropolis, you can actually, right outside the Acropolis, you see the area where the Greeks would actually hold trials.
Absolutely, you absolutely can. And it's in the Agora.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like much.
It doesn't look like much, but of course they actually held trials there. And people were tried before a jury.
Yep.
Selected by lot. So there was no question of, you know, careful jury selection as we have now.
What does that mean, selected by lot?
So in other words, it was done by chance. There was a machine that used to select people by lot, and they used to, it was completely random. Mm-hmm. You'd have a random selection of jurors.
And there was a judge.
Absolutely. And you have these enormous, extraordinary political trials, because they were often about politics, mm-hmm. because there were political trials. One of the crimes in ancient Athens was to try to mislead the sovereign people. You told the sovereign people things which were untrue. It was considered to be striking at democracy itself, because the sovereign people needed to have reliable information, and somebody was lying to them and deceiving them was therefore undermining the functions of democracy. Now, you know, that's a pretty radical thought, but, you know, the Greeks did invent democracy, the Athenians did invent democracy, and they would have said that a democracy where there isn't that kind of protection is a very dangerous thing. And, of course, it was always left to personal initiative to bring that kind of trial, and it was the people themselves selected randomly through these juries, and Athenian juries were enormous. There were hundreds of people on these juries. They would then listen, and they would then make a decision.
All right, so yeah, it's like an outdoor area. It's right at the entrance up towards the hill, towards the Acropolis. Like I said, you would never guess that trials were actually being held there, no. Because it's very unassuming. But do you have any idea what the sentences would be in Athens? Like, what would they sentence people to? Like, was there prison, or was there any type of...
There was prison.
Or was it fines?
Fines were much more common. in very rare instances, as in the case of Socrates, there was the death sentence. But one of the most interesting sentences was actually exile. And one of the most curious things about the Athenian mechanism of exile is that people would actually be exiled from Athens, not necessarily because they'd committed a crime, but because it was seen as a way of stabilizing the political system. There'd be somebody who would be too controversial, so you'd exile him for a time. There wouldn't be any criticism of him as such, no suggestion that he was criminal in any way, no criminal sanctions, no seizure of his property or anything like that. He'd be able to come back, resume his full rights of citizenship, but it was done in order to stabilize the political system, especially in times of crisis. But the important thing, the key thing to understand about Athenian democracy is that, one, it was direct. The Athenian people were directly involved in making all the decisions themselves. They were voting continuously on things. There weren't elections in the sense that we understand it today. You'd come forward, you'd propose a policy that all the Athenian citizen body would be entitled to participate and vote, like a kind of referendum, if you like. And they had the power to make decisions, and they had the power to make, you know, through this jury system. It was they who tried people. And what we know is that the Athenians liked listening to lots of different opinions. They liked hearing people come forward in good faith, set forward their arguments to them, and if people were explaining things in good faith, that was essential, because the Athenians understood that democracy is based on choice. Denying the sovereign people a choice was an attack on democracy as well. Withholding information from the sovereign people was an attack on democracy as well. So provided you acted in good faith, and it was assumed you were talking in good faith, then there would be, the Athenians would want to hear you, and you would get a polite and attention to you from the Athenian citizen body. And you have a place like the Pnyx, where the Athenian assembly used to meet, and anybody could get up and speak, and they'd be listened to politely and courteously as the people took their decision as to what to do.
TheDuran.locals.com, Duran Shop, 10% off. Use the code GOODDAY. Take care.